The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome along to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And Manchester United fans will be delighted because we are talking all things Ten Hag. Erik Ten Hag has been confirmed as the new Man United boss and he will be in place at Old Trafford for next season. The Dutchman finds himself with a bulging in-tray to deal with as he arrives in Manchester next month. Squad grumbles, leaks, poor performances and some massive calls to make are set to dominate the summer for United, and Ten Hag looks almost likely to bring in a wholesale changes to the Red Devils squad. So with that in mind, on today's pod, we'll be delving into the main areas in need of strengthening for Ten Hag. A new goalkeeper, right back, defensive midfielder, central midfielder, and potentially a striker could all be on the agenda, and we're going to be checking out the options available to Ten Hag and the existing choices at United as he makes his decision. So, plenty to get stuck into today. As always, my name's Fergal Brennan, and ever eager to impart his grand plans for United 2.0, we've got Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, are you ready?
I'm ready. I had 10 signings. I wanted to do all 10 signings, the ones that they ran out of a link with, but they said, no, calm down. Let's just do, they're not going to sign 10 players in the summer. Just pick the five that they need the most. And I was like, all right, cool. What can we do? And then narrow it down to these five. I wanted to do all 10. I've got all 10. Believe me, United need 8 starters. It's bad, bad, bad team.
I think that's a sensible approach to take. So we are just going to stick to 5 for today's podcast. Alongside Mo, we have Premier League football writer for the Evening Standard, James Robson. James, welcome to the Talker podcast on your debut, throwing you in the deep end. 10, 15, 20 new players at Manchester United this summer.
Well, I think a lot of United fans would feel the same way. I'm perhaps a little bit more reserved. Maybe United would appreciate someone like me on their recruitment staff, because I would say that maybe they don't need quite as drastic surgery as we think. But by no means am I giving them a pass for this season at all, but I'm still remembering they finished second last year.
Okay, well, there's maybe a sensible move for Ten Hag to make between now and the start of next season. Get Robson to Old Trafford. Forget about all these big-name players, Declan Rice. Keep them a sensible hand on the wheel behind things. So we're going to start with goalkeepers, Mo. David De Gea has maybe returned to the old David De Gea this season in terms of the way that he's performing. He's been really, really important for United in what's been a difficult season, and particularly looking at 2022. And just some of the numbers are worth delving into to just remind ourselves about how good David De Gea is. So before we look at some of the options, David De Gea deserves some respect. Put some respect on his name, because he is very important for United, and it's not necessarily certain that he'll be moved out this summer.
I mean, this is the thing. We're talking about goalkeepers because I do think United need to bring someone in as a goalkeeper, because I think Dean Henderson is clearly unhappy being a backup, which he is right now. Tom Heaton and Lee Grant are, like, they're there to, I don't even know why they're there. I think for quota reasons, probably, nationality quotas. So, you know, you need a backup. You need a challenge to De Gea anyway, regardless. I don't think De Gea, he doesn't appear to have what it takes to be a goalkeeper for Erik ten Hag, in that he's not very good with the ball at his feet. He's a miraculous shot stopper. When it comes to shot stopping, he's sensational. In the Premier League this season, he's prevented 2.5 goals with his saves. Only Fraser Forster and the immortal Jose Sarr this year have got more, right? He's been great saving shots. Like last night, we saw when Chelsea shot the ball, he kept a shot at him, he kept saving it. Then Alonso shot to his side and they went in. But still, he played well. He's a good presence. He's a United fixture right now. He's been there almost 10 years. Or has it been 10 years now? And more to the point, at the end of next season, if he plays a full season next year, he will be probably 10th all-time in Man United's appearance-making list, which is incredible. What an achievement. So I don't think they're realistically going to shift him from the number one spot, but I think they should look to bring someone in to challenge him and maybe push him to either be greater or maybe, yeah, take his spot, because I think he's got weaknesses that are going to hold United back under Ten Hag.
We're going to come back to you in a second, Mo, with some of the Premier League options potentially that could be coming in to replace David De Gea at Old Trafford this summer. But James, I want to ask you about one of Ten Hag's old boys or young boys at Ajax, because this is one of the big storylines that he will look to bring players with him from Ajax to United this summer. And this always happens when a manager comes from another club into the Premier League. How many players will they bring? And is that part of their plan? So Andre Onana is out of contract at Ajax this summer. Obviously, stats and data on him is a little bit mixed because he was banned for the back end of last season and a portion of this season. He has come back, and this is a goalkeeper that got Ajax to within touching distance of the 2019 Champions League final. His stats, as I say, are a little bit mixed because he's not played as much football this year, but progression with the ball, he is more positive than David De Gea. He's a younger goalkeeper. He's been courted by some big clubs in the past. There's talk that Inter Milan are edging closer to a deal on him. Could he be an option? And particularly if Ten Hag wants to have one of his guys in the team, is he someone that maybe could be moving this summer?
I think there's a problem here, because I totally understand the point that De Gea probably isn't going to fit any sort of modern manager, if you like, because, you know, he's not great with the ball at his feet. And that is what you expect nowadays of a goalkeeper. But United simply cannot get rid of him. There's nobody on the planet who can pay his wages. So therefore, you can't get rid of him. So do you then bring in, even if it's a free signing, do you bring someone in who's going to create that sort of a problem for you? You've got the situation that Chelsea have got, where they've got the world's most expensive goalkeeper who's the backup. Now, they got away with that because they had a billionaire who didn't mind spending all the money in the world on that squad, and they can put a £97.5 million striker on the bench as well. You know, most clubs can't operate like that. And that just creates a problem. We saw the problem United had when Alexis Sanchez was on the bench, you know, the highest paid player in the Premier League, and couldn't get a game. And they had to get him out of the club. Now, I just don't see another club being able to take De Gea. I mean, you tell me, who is the club who's coming in for him and is going to pay the close to £400,000 a week for him? And United would probably like a fee for him as well. So I just can't see that happening. And my feeling was with Henderson that they needed to bring him back to the club when he was at Sheffield United, and De Gea needed that sort of competition. And I suppose you could say, although obviously Henderson's had his injuries and his absences, De Gea did improve when he returned to the club. On the flip side of that, I would say that it's in his history at United, De Gea has been at his best when United have been at their worst. And that is because he's a wonderful shot stopper. It's because he has amazing agility. And also, I think he's a goalkeeper who needs to be kept busy. If you look back to someone like Edwin van der Sar, his brilliance was the fact that he might only be called upon once or twice a game and he'd pull it off. He'd pull off a great save. De Gea, I think he has these massive lapses in concentration. But when he's constantly, like you remember the Moyes years and the Van Gaal years, when he's constantly getting battered, that's when you see him. And that's when he's at his best. Now, I do feel a bit like he's probably a goalkeeper out of his time. And you can maybe, I don't buy at all that Cristiano Ronaldo is a problem at United whatsoever, but I can appreciate that maybe he doesn't quite fit into the hard, high-pressing, all-energy football that maybe, you know, most managers seem to be turning to these days. And perhaps, you know, that sort of... Lukaku's probably felt the same at Chelsea, where that sort of... How many of that sort of just orthodox strikers do you have in the world? And I think De Gea's a bit like that as a goalkeeper, you know... Nowadays, it's absolutely vital they can use their feet, and his feet just are not very good.
Spanish Shay Given, like he's like amazing shot stopper. But this is what I've been saying for years. Like a great, he like you say, he's a great shot stopper, but I don't think he organizes his defense well either. As well, this is the thing. He's always rooted to his lineman crosses come in. He looks petrified to leave it, and I think that's part of why United for years have had so much dysfunction in the team. Once the defensive pillars of Rio Ferdinand and Emmanuel Vidic left the side, like new guys would come in, but it's like they weren't leaders in the same way that Rio and Vidic were. And De Gea definitely isn't a leader of that goal as well. But look, just to quickly go over, I do agree. I don't think they're going to shift him. I think, but they need to bring someone in to challenge him. I think Henderson is sick of the role now. He wants to go play somewhere, right? And also Henderson isn't great with his feet either, to be perfectly honest. But you look at two guys that stand at the Premier League for me are Ilan Meslier at Leeds and David Raya at Brentford. And I think they're both really, really good. They've both attempted more passes per 90 in the Premier League than since the start of 2020 than David De Gea. Obviously, Raya's only played one season, but Meslier's played two. De Gea's played two. There are loads more touches per 90, but that's obviously a function of the way that those teams play. But it's a signal that they're more confident. Like Medley has 44.5 run touches per 90 since the start of 2020. David Raya has 51.4, De Gea only 27.61. So it's a clear sign that United aren't comfortable giving the ball to De Gea because they know he's not comfortable with it. But it's not just that, you know, it's not just passing. Passing is huge, obviously, but it's also the fact that I think De Gea stays on his line too much. Crosses caught, right, since the start of 2020. Melier 0.62 per 90. David Raya 1 cross caught per 90, right? De Gea 0.17. He stays standing on his line and it makes his defender's job so much harder. They have to clear everything because he's not going to come and help them out at all. Think about how amazing Alisson is when Chelsea are under the cross, he just comes off his line, just grabs it, puts in his arms, and it's like takes so much pressure off the defense. Thibaut Courtois does it for Real Madrid really well too. The best goalkeepers know how to do this because they dominate their area. You know, they come and they grab the ball and they make it easier for their defenders to not have to clear everything, right? So I think they definitely need to bring in David Raya or Ilan Meslier, but a goalkeeper that can play Ten Hag football, because what will happen is either De Gea will have to rise to the challenge or he will just have to drop out of the team. And I agree that it's a problem having the highest paid player on the bench and what have you, but ultimately, I think De Gea is enough of a competitor that he might just accept the challenge.
Yeah, indeed. I think the best way to sum this up before we take a quick break is that nobody in Madrid is rushing to fix any fax machines. That's the main thing. When I think of David De Gea moving, and I take James's point about wages, nobody's rushing around to fix that fax machine. So we're going to move on. We're going to take a very quick break. And after the break, we are talking right backs. Welcome back to the Erik ten Hag transfer special here on the Squawker Talker podcast. We've discussed David De Gea and some of the potential replacements for United's long-standing custodian between the sticks. We're going to move on to right-backs now. Mo, this is a touchy subject for you because it involves your adopted son, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Now, Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Diogo Dalo are the current options for Erik ten Hag at right-back for Manchester United next season. Diogo Dalo arguably fits more of what Ten Hag would want, which probably means that Wan-Bissaka might be squeezed out. So I want to look at some of the options that are potentially on the table for Ten Hag. And following this Onana theme of bringing players from Ajax with him, we've got Nasser Mousari. So he was brilliant for Ajax under Ten Hag at right back. Progressive, front foot right back. Passes attempted per 90, 82 compared to 70 for Dalo. Passes completed, 86% compared to 81% for Diogo Dalo. Progressive carries per 90 minutes, 7.4 compared to 5.3. And progressive passes into the final third of the opposition, 6.5 compared to 4. Now, those numbers tell the story of a right back that wants to get forward, wants to make a positive impact in the opposition half, maybe even in the opposition's defensive third, whereas Diogo Dalo doesn't really match up to that. And Aaron Wan-Bissaka, as we know, anyone that listened to the Wan-Bissaka fandom of a few weeks ago, is a very good one-on-one defensive fullback, but he maybe doesn't offer what Ten Hag wants from a right-back.
Yeah, no, he definitely doesn't. And, I love Wan-Bissaka, but it's probably curtains for him this summer because there will be market for him because there are plenty of teams who do defend first. Like, for example, if he went to Atletico Madrid, he'd be amazing. Like, under Simeone, Wan-Bissaka would be fantastic in that back three. Forget about it with his lockdown defending. But for United, yeah, his time's probably over. Dalo is just pure 6 out of 10 every week. He's not bad, but he's not good either. I mean, you know, everyone always goes on about how he defends the back post. Marcus Alonso had the freedom of Old Trafford back there, you know. So Dalo is not the answer, except unless the question is, who is the Portuguese right back that wears number 20 and plays for Man United? There's no other question he's the answer to, right? So you need to have a starter. Mazraoui is very, very good, right? He's phenomenal. He can do a bit of everything. He's been linked with about every club under the sun, which is why I think it might be hard for United to get him, if it's true. Because unless he's really enamoured with Ten Hag and really wants to continue working with him, like, he's been linked with Bayern Munich, he's been linked with Barcelona, he's been linked with lots of clubs. Like, if you had a choice between living in Manchester, living in Barcelona, working with Xavi, playing in that system, or playing for Bayern Munich, working with Julian Nagelsmann, playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, winning titles every year, or playing for Man United, where it's going to be a hard slog to turn it around, what would you pick, realistically? So I don't think Mazraoui is necessarily a viable... I mean, it's something they should go for, but they need to look at alternatives. I've got a couple here that aren't... Mauro Junior is another one. He's at PSV, another right back. Or Serginho Dest, also at Barcelona. May or may not be out of favour with Xavi. We don't really know. It's hard to tell. But those two are very young right backs with talent. Same sort of profile as Mazraoui. They're not as rounded as Mazraoui, right? Mazraoui does almost everything you want as a fullback, right? So where like Dest, for example, has the dribble, has the take-ons, has the expected assist, touches in the opposition's box, gets forward a lot, but isn't as potent of a dribbler, isn't as potent of a tackler. Mauro Junior, same sort of thing, right? He's got a similar profile to, but it's not quite as developed. There's another one also, Petar Stojanovic at Empoli. He's very good. He's 26, he's a bit old, he's 26, but he's got a much more rounded Mazraoui-like profile. So I think he could be someone they could look at and maybe think, maybe we can get this guy in and he could come in and do a job. He's not a very fancy player, Slovenian international. You know, so he wouldn't cost as much, I would imagine. He could be quite a good budget option, but they do need a right back that can actually play the ball, advance the ball, pass the ball, and, you know, do everything. Maybe there's also Ethan Laird from the youth team as well, to be fair. There's options.
There's a Premier League option, James, that I want to ask you about, and he kind of gets forgotten because England are so blessed with fantastic right-backs at the moment. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Reece James, Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier. Tariq Lamptey, he's only 21, but he is still making massive strides to catch up with what's an all-star list of right-backs for England at the moment. And he's in a similar position to Mazraoui in terms of the best stuff he does is in the opposition's halves. And some of his big numbers are better than the average midfielder in the Premier League this season. Shot-creating actions, 2.9 per 90 minutes. That's better than many, many Premier League midfielders. And progressive carries per game, 9.2. So that's more than one every 10 minutes. So almost 9 to 10 times a game, he is breaking past his opposition fullback and creating something. He is young. There is the defensive side of his game to maybe be improved. He's operating under Graham Potter, who's a fantastic coach at Brighton. Could he be an option? Maybe not necessarily right now, but longer term, another season or maybe a little bit longer at Brighton for Manchester United.
He's certainly a very exciting player. I've seen him a few times this season. And he's the sort of player who would get fans off their seats. It'd also be a bit of a, I suppose, a statement sort of signing in terms of the type of football United would be looking to play as well, to get someone who's so exciting going forward. That would be the kind of, I suppose, interesting, imaginative signing maybe United fans would like to see them do a bit more of under a new manager. Instead of, I mean, look, we know all about the 804 right backs that they looked at before signing Wan-Bissaka, and somehow missed Kieran Trippier on that. I still think that was such a huge mistake, and not only once. You know, letting him go to Atletico was one thing, and then letting him come back to Newcastle was another. I just can't believe they didn't move for him. I think he would have been a quality signing, would have, you know, solved that issue for a good 3 years, let's say. But yeah, that would be interesting. I think that's what United fans would like to see a bit more of from them. Obviously, look, as a club, the fans love to see the huge money signings and the superstars come. But certainly, if you look in recent years, that just has not worked out at all. And maybe a couple more left field types. And given that they've got a coach now who really likes improving players as well, it would be, you know, I'm thinking of an example like Andy Robertson when he went to Liverpool. You know, he wasn't on. I don't remember many people talking about, oh, he's the next superstar fullback. And then even to an extent, Jota as well. Wolves fans knew what a good player he was. But I don't think anyone thought he was going to be a star for Liverpool. You know, those sort of signings where there's clearly evidence that they're suited to this football and that they've got a lot of talent. And then get them in with a top quality coach who can actually get the best out of them. I think United fans would love to see a bit of that. And we really haven't seen much of that over the past, well, since Fergie left, really.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to wrap up on right backs. Take another quick break. After the break, it is DMC. And it could be another War of the Roses. Calvin Phillips linked with Old Trafford and long-term target Declan Rice. Will United pay the big bucks to bring Rice to Old Trafford? We're going to be talking about both of those players in just a sec. Yeah. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. We're moving on to midfield, or more specifically, DMC, defensive central midfield. James, I'm going to go to you first on this because there's huge amounts of interest surrounding this particular position because it's two current England internationals that are on the list, albeit a long list, of players that Manchester United could be tracking. Calvin Phillips from Leeds United and Declan Rice from West Ham. Now, Calvin Phillips, due to his injury problems this season, his stats are a little bit distorted based on current numbers. He's probably rated at around £50 million, whereas Declan Rice, if you believe what some papers are reporting, it could be in excess of 100. Phillips is a specialist as a single pivot, particularly under Marcelo Bielsa. We're yet to see completely how Jesse March is going to deploy him, whereas Declan Rice's role has changed this season. There's been so much talk about him being a natural holding midfielder, particularly if he was to move to United. But this season, that has changed. So Phillips' main thing is being a central ball winner. And if we look at the back end of last season, he was in the top five for key passing progressions through the middle third of the pitch, tackles won, defensive third tackles, and they were all better than what Manchester United's current DMC options are doing. Rice's slightly altered role has unlocked a new level to him this season. So he can play as a six, he can play as an eight. And some of the numbers are quite impressive. He's fourth for passes into the final third in the Premier League this season with 210. He's sixth for tackles won at 53. And he's joint top for interceptions with 88. And third for final third carries with 86. So this shows a real maturity to Rice's game that he can do a bit of everything. He can make an impact in different areas of the pitch. But he would cost a phenomenal amount of money, whereas Calvin Phillips could trigger a civil war.
There's two ways of looking at this. So in my mind's eye, and I think in the probably I would imagine most Manchester United fans feel this way, when they think about a Manchester United midfielder, Declan Rice fits that perfectly. And when I say that, he fits it perfectly, but they haven't had a midfielder like that for well over a decade. They've had a midfielder like that since Roy Keane. I don't think he's Roy Keane, but you know, I think Declan Rice can be the absolute all-round box-to-box midfielder, do everything. And that is what United fans love. They love someone who can absolutely just boss the middle of the pitch. And whenever they talk about their dream midfielders, it is Roy Keane, it is Brian Robson, it's that type of player. And I think Declan Rice is that sort of just heroic figure who can do that. Bigger, stronger than everyone, quicker than everyone, you know, all those sort of things. And that's what United fans love and what they envisage when they think of a central midfielder. And I think it's been, you know, a real disappointment to them that they've never replaced Roy Keane. And a few times I thought they might. They thought Owen Hargreaves could have been it, and Owen Hargreaves might have been, but for his injuries. But they've just never had that absolute box to box bossing midfielder. So Declan Rice could be that. And if it costs £150 million to do that, if he could be that sort of hero, that icon, the player on which they can build a revolution, then that's not too much money to my mind. And I know, you know, it's massively different figures, but Roy Keane was a British record when they signed him. And they signed Michael Carrick for, what was it, 18 million. People thought that was crazy. You know, for quality players, no one talked about those fees afterwards. Now, I mentioned Michael Carrick because he was never a Roy Keane type. He wore his shirt, but he was never a Roy Keane type. And I think that always kind of disappointed United fans. But you can't underestimate what a wonderful player he was for them and how crucial he was. And that's where I think a Calvin Phillips could maybe be that. And maybe that is also just a bit more emblematic of modern day football. That maybe, all right, he's not as dynamic as Declan Rice, not as dynamic as a Keane, I keep mentioning. But I remember Fergie absolutely adored Michael Carrick. And the main reason was he said he just always played the ball forward. And it sounds very simple, but too many midfielders play the ball sideways or backwards. It's safe, safe, safe. And Michael Carrick, it was always forward, looking to probe and hurt and push the opposition back. I actually think Calvin Phillips can be a bit too sideways in his playing, particularly for England, where I've watched him most. So I think he would need to improve on that. But, you know, that might be down to the England manager that's maybe a bit more cautious. You know, I would want to see him taking control of games more than I think he does for England. He's had his moments, don't get me wrong, but I'd want to see him doing that more if he came to United. But if it was down to me and it was a choice, it would be go out and get Declan Rice. I wrote a piece about this week, actually, that this summer is probably United's best chance of getting him. Not in the sense that West Ham say they're just not going to sell him and they've told Rice we will reject all offers. Those, whenever you hear those sort of things, you've got to put it to the test. But it's the fact that, you know, Man City like him, but Man City are going to spend a lot of money on Erling Haaland, not on the transfer fee, but that package is going to be enormous. Do they then go and spend 150 million? I don't think so. Personally, Chelsea, long-time admirers of him, but they've got to sign two top-class centre-backs this summer. That's going to take up the best part of 100 million. Do they then have that sort of money to spend 150 in midfield? I don't think so either. So this could be United's best chance to do it. And what statement signing it would be.
Yeah. You know what as well? What you're describing there, James, is what they need is they need both of them, if we're being perfectly honest. Like they need a central midfielder. I mean, this is the thing. We've got central midfielder and defensive midfielder on this list today. And Rice should be the central midfielder and Phillips should be the defensive midfielder. They need both of them. Phillips, Rice and Bruno Fernandes is a hell of a midfield. That's a hell of a midfield. But, you know, I agree with you. I think ultimately money is, you know, have make enough money that they can afford to buy someone like Declan Rice, right? If the Glazers forego their annual dividends, they could literally, because I mean, I'm pretty sure their dividends are about 150 million. So, you know, you just don't get paid for a year, the Glazers, and you know, United can afford to buy Declan Rice and spend 150 million on other players as well. So there's definitely a chance there. And I agree. I think Declan Rice is a fantastic, but I'll touch on him more in a second because I think he's more suited to central midfield. Defensive midfield, I agree. Calvin Phillips is really good, but the thing is, and I don't know if you've ever done this before, I've mentioned Calvin Phillips going to Man United on Twitter a few times. Leeds fans do not like that when you do it. They do not like that. And they let you know about it. They really let you know about it. And I didn't think I thought I was being indefensive. I was saying, he's such a good player, Man United should buy him. And they just looked, they started talking to me like I had committed some cardinal sins. So, and that's just the fans. He is very Leeds. You know, he loves Leeds, boyhood club. You know, so I don't, and he's never spoken about wanting to move elsewhere either. He seems very content to stay at his boyhood club. So I don't necessarily think that's really on. Even if Leeds would deal with United, which I mean, who knows if they would, I don't think Phillips would ever push for it. I don't think he'd even maybe even accept it, frankly. So I think you rule Phillips out, but that's okay because I think there's a better player out there anyway. Ibrahim Sangare at PSV. There's two options. Ibrahim Sangare at PSV and Aurélien Tchouaméni at Monaco, who are both sensational holding midfielders. Tchouaméni is probably the better talent, but he's also being courted by Liverpool and Real Madrid. And as things stand right now, if you had choice between Liverpool, Real Madrid and Man United, you're not picking Man United, being realistic about it, let's be honest. So Sangare is less courted for some reason. I don't know why. And he's just phenomenal. And you look at the pivot that Ajax have right now, Edson Álvarez, right? He's really solid, really high, ranks high for ball recoveries, touches, interceptions made, duels won. You know, he's a defensive machine. And ranks very highly for forward passes. Just like you said about Carrick, always puts the ball forward. Álvarez does that too. Do you know who does it more than Álvarez? Ibrahim Sangare. In fact, if you look at their passing radars, it's literally like Sangare is just Álvarez, but better. Everything that Álvarez has done over the last 2 years, since the start of 2020 in the Eredivisie, all of his stats, all of his stats collated into a radar. You look at it, it looks really good. And then Sangare's is just it's just Álvarez's radar, but bigger. Everything is, he's better at everything. Like this kid is sensational. No one's talking about him. He's Ivorian international. No one's talking about him. I can't imagine he'll cost that much money. He's PSV. I think he's a steal waiting to happen. You know, he's got more tackles and interceptions than anyone in the Eredivisie this season. He's fourth, but possesses one in the attacking third as well, which means he can push up and press. Right, he's got 26 possessions, one in the attacking third. He's high usage player. Only one player has completed more passes than him in the Eredivisie. He's absolutely made to play this number six role in the Premier League for Man United. He's got the physical capabilities to handle it. He's got the technical capabilities to handle it. He could be a transformative signing at the base of that midfield. I don't think he'd cost a lot of money either.
I get frustrated when, over the past year, when I've heard United fans go on about a holding midfielder, I've got to say, because, you know, United fans want the best player in every position. That's the only way they're going to win the title, apparently, which, of course, is complete nonsense. But I get particularly frustrated with that position, and maybe I'm being disrespectful to that position, but I genuinely think it's the easiest position to play on the pitch. And I think the failure to get Fred to have been effective there or to get McTominay to have been effective there is it really does not look good on Solskjaer. And even, well, Fred's improved under Ranić, you have to say. But I think, I mean, I remember back in the day when Phil Neville was converted from a fullback to a very useful holding midfielder. I remember one game he pretty much silenced Patrick Vieira in a game at Old Trafford. You know, that is a job that relies on discipline. And Fred is a technically gifted footballer as well. McTominay is a very athletic footballer. That relies on discipline. So if you as a coach cannot get a player to be disciplined in that position, or I'm not saying they're going to be, let's say, Makélélé. That's not necessarily the case. But if you can't get a professional athlete who's good enough to play for Manchester United in the first place to be an effective holding midfielder, I think that says more about you than them as a coach. So that has frustrated me over this time. I thought the midfield, all right, Pogba, it just has not worked out for him, and no United manager's managed to get the best role for him. But I thought Pogba, Fernandes, and McTominay or Fred as a holding midfielder, I think that should have been a good enough midfield for United to properly compete.
So I would respectfully disagree about holding midfielder. I think in the modern game, when Phil Neville, when he played back in the day, yeah, it wasn't. But since the Guardiola revolution 2008, I think holding midfielder has evolved, and it's now such a more complex position. And you look at the importance of it. And part of the reason why Pogba has only ever really played well for Man United consistently in left wing is because if you look at when he gets the ball on his left wing, he gets the ball in that half space between the opponent's midfield and defence, in that left half space. And that's where attacking midfielders should get the ball, like playing midfield. Like he should be able to play midfield three and get the ball there. But he can't because Man United, like you said, never had a holding midfielder that actually Fred, McTominay, whoever it is, Schneiderlin they had for a while, they've never had a holding midfielder that can accurately play that position and pass the ball forward since Michael Carrick. They had Schweinsteiger for a while, but injuries really made him limited his impact. So that's it. And that's the position. So that the reason Pogba has failed at United ultimately is because the midfield has never been set up to get the best out of him. And so the managers have just crammed him in different roles, different positions. And he's by nature an inconsistent player anyway. And so these issues just exacerbated the issues that are already there. And that's why we struggle to see the best of Paul Pogba. I think getting a holding midfielder that can play the game to a high level is very difficult in this modern age. And especially so when you know you need it to complete your midfield. But now Pogba's going to leave Man United probably. So they can maybe be a bit more of a punt on the role, which I think Sangare is a great fit. But then, of course, you need to get the central midfield right because you need two midfielders to go with Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, box ticked for defensive midfield. We're going to take a little move across, not too far, because we're moving to central midfield. Some of the names mentioned are going to be repeated. Mo's put his order in for a side of Basmati, Busquets. Paul Pogba's also going to get thrown in. We're going to be talking about his future, but ultimately deciding who else do Manchester United need in their midfield. Right, moving on to central midfield. We've already picked our possible suggestions for DCM under Erik ten Hag. Bruno Fernandes, we're pretty much universally decided, isn't going anywhere. He's going to be an important player for Manchester United this season and in the long term. But James, Paul Pogba's situation looks almost settled, even before Erik ten Hag steps foot in Old Trafford. And how the midfield gets restructured will decide whether he's, quote, replaced or not. And you mentioned going all the way back to Roy Keane earlier on, this idea of replacing Manchester United midfielders never works out well, never keeps the fans happy, and never really fits the balance of the team. So maybe the word replaced should be removed when it comes to Paul Pogba. Erik ten Hag, based on his Ajax days, he does opt for a flatter midfield three with a relatively shallow number six and two number eights that don't press too hard. Primarily this season, United have gone for a 4-2-3-1, but their rivals, looking at Manchester City and Liverpool, have gone for a 4-1-2-3, this idea of a Fabinho or a Rodri with two eights. Now, if he wants to go and match that, if he wants to go and play Liverpool and City at their own game, that will decide which targets he goes for. So we're looking at a couple of options here that can play a slightly deeper role, a slightly flatter role, as an eight, as a six. And two of the names that have flashed up are Yuri Tielemans and Jude Bellingham. Tielemans is a Swiss Army knife or a Belgian Army knife of a player. He can play as a double pivot. He can play as a right-sided number eight. And Jude Bellingham, you only have to watch him playing for Dortmund or England. He can pretty much do anything. His big strength is that ability to break lines with passes, 89.5% pass success rate, both for short and medium passes. The only player in the Bundesliga that's even close to him for pass successes and dribbles is Christopher Nkunku. And then you look at Tielemans at Leicester. He wants to move on. He said that he wants to play Champions League football. He's earned his Premier League stripes at Leicester. He might not be as glamorous a signing as other players, but he's a very experienced individual. And then someone like Bellingham has the potential to become a generational talent.
Well, Bellingham is United's dream signing. You know, that it's as simple as that. They would absolutely love him there. They wanted him when he left Birmingham. They put up a really strong pitch for him as well, even rolled out Fergie to try to convince him. And I think it kind of shows where United are at the moment, that in a very short space of time, both he and Erling Haaland ignored their advances and decided they'd be better off at Dortmund. That's worrying for United. They've got to change that trend and they've got to change it quickly. But I mean, yes, for me, if I don't think they need to replace Pogba, because unfortunately Pogba just hasn't worked for them. So they certainly don't need to replace him. They need to get a consistent, effective midfielder in the team, which is something he just hasn't been. I think when he's at his best, I don't really think there's anyone like him, to be honest, Pogba. The way he carries the ball, he dribbles like a winger in the middle of the pitch. I think he's a wonderful player, but you get that once every four or five games. It's nowhere near good enough. And it's been just emblematic of United's problems ever since he came, really. So I think Bellingham, yes, you go all out, you try to get him, but I just don't think he's going anywhere this summer. I don't see Dortmund letting him and Haaland go, and they don't need to.
Yeah, Dortmund do one a year, don't they, really? They sell one a summer.
United will probably be well aware of that, and there's no point in wasting their time on lost causes, especially in such a crucial summer. I think something that really has helped United this summer is the fact that players actually want to leave, which hasn't been the case in the past. You know, if Jesse Lingard wanted to stay, there's a new contract there waiting for him. You know, if Pogba wanted to stay, they'd sign him up in an instant. You know, who knows, maybe Mata would get a new deal as well. United just don't let players go because, heaven forbid, they lose out on that value. So they'd rather just pay them enormous sums to keep them not even playing. So that's a real benefit for them. And when it comes to, as we were talking before, signing the likes of Rice, if they can, even at such a huge fee, you've got to look at the amount of money United are going to be saving on a week-to-week basis with the players that are going. Cavani, Pogba, Lingard, that's massive money every week. So that should make more money available.
Yeah, I think Bruno, Tielemans is a good shout. Ruben Neves is another that's been linked with United before. He could play six or eight, depending on what they get. But yeah, you can see the desperate need for someone in there. Now, but to me, all right, Tielemans is great, but he's more of a passer. He's more of a prober. Same thing with Ruben Neves, right? To me, you look at the profiles. You've got to look at the profiles of the Ajax midfield and see that Ten Hag might want to try and recreate that style, right? So he had a 6 in Ajax and he had a 10. The 10, obviously, is going to be Bruno Fernandes. It might, or Donny van de Beek, who literally played that role for him at Ajax. So Bruno is the man. Donny's your more than capable backup, right? So you're set there. Number 6, I think you sign Sangare. And then I think you could do with a backup as well. I don't know who that is. Number 8, your backup is McTominay. He's great at that. He's a box-to-box midfielder by nature. Anyway, you can coach him and teach him how to do other things. Fine. You need a starting 8. So for me, you've got to look at the profile. And the profile you want to really replicate is a midfielder who can carry the ball, who can run with it, who can dribble, and who can create stuff in the final third, and who can even do a bit of defensive work. Ryan Gravenberch is the profile. He literally is the profile. He does it for Ajax right now. That's the role he plays. He plays under Ten Hag. And his contract expires in the next season. And he seems to not be going to renew, basically. So I think the word is he's going to leave this summer. They're going to sell him to get some value out of him. I mean, he's right there. Just tell Ten Hag is working with him every day. Say, Eric, just tell him to come to United. And just make an offer. I don't think he's going to cost a lot of money. It's Ajax. Ajax always sell for reasonable fees. And he's got a contract expiring in a year. I think 25 million, 30 million, maybe 40 at a push. He'll be sorted. He'll get it done. And he's a really, really good midfielder. He can dribble. He can carry the ball. He gets rolled into the box, takes shots on goal, creates pressure, has dribbles. So dribbling is the key, right? Because United don't have a lot of dribbling. And the best way to carry the ball up the field and to threaten opponents and hurt opponents that are sitting deep is to be able to dribble the ball.
Okay, fair enough, right? We're going to move on to our final section. We're going to let the handbrake off a little bit as we are talking strikers. Right, we're going to wrap up with Ten Hag's options in attack. And we're going to split this into two sections because for me, he either goes for broke and he brings in a new player, or he tries to repurpose and change some of the currently existing options that he has at Manchester United. Now, James, I'm going to leave the other options to Mo because he's got some killer stats on one of the possible targets. So I want to ask you about Marcus Rashford. He's been massively under the microscope so far this season in terms of his form, the fact that he's dropped off, and we're not seeing the Marcus Rashford that is buried in there somewhere. He's a fantastic player, he's a fantastic human being, but the brilliant goal scorer, the ball carrier, the electrifying player that he is, we haven't seen this season. Out wide on the left is when we have seen his best numbers as a Manchester United player, but the assumption is that that is now Jadon Sancho's role because he is a specialist at that. Marcus Rashford wants to play through the middle. He's made that point very clear in the past. Is it now make or break for him? Depending on what happens with Cristiano Ronaldo, we know that Edinson Cavani is going to be moving on this summer. If Erik ten Hag brings him into the middle, are the building blocks there for Marcus Rashford to become the player that United fans do want him to become in the next 12 months?
I think it's a generous assessment to say we've not seen the best of him over the past year. This dates back a lot longer than this season. And I think that is the concern for Rashford. I'm thinking 2 years, maybe even longer. You know, it was maybe Solskjaer's first full season. We saw glimpses of maybe him being a goal scorer. He's just not come on, and that's a big problem. Now, a lot of that was playing through injury for a long time, and I know that just sounds like an excuse, but if you're actually playing through pain for a long time, that will obviously have a huge impact on your development. But he has not developed, and that is a real shame, because I thought when he came through, I thought he was going to be an absolute top class talent. And you know, we're not seeing, you know, he's not holding down a regular place at the moment. There are no surprises if he's not in the team, because he just doesn't really warrant it. Now, he's not been helped by the coaching he's been given. I think that's fair to say. He's not been helped by the fact he hasn't nailed down a position either. You know, these are definitely factors. So maybe if Ten Hag says, look, I can see what a brilliant player you are, and then, you know, you're obviously a great centre forward. You're going to be my centre forward. You know, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see someone get a hold of him and say, look, let's get you back to what you were. Because, you know, he was a right the way coming through from a kid at United. They thought that he was someone special, and he looked like it when he came through. But now you look at it and you just can't see it happening, and you're looking for glimpses and it's just not there. You know, he's not a particularly good dribbler. He doesn't beat people very often. He's not clinical in front of goal. Generally, his decision-making, even in wide positions in terms of creating chances, they're not great. I mean, do you remember the one that, it was a couple of years ago when he was on the touchline in the box, and he did some sort of 360 with the ball to set up Pogba. It was a brilliant move. And at that point, it felt like, you know, this was a guy at the top of the peak of his powers and could go even further. And he's just dropped off so far. It's been really disappointing to see. So my hope would be that someone can do something with him. But yeah, I suppose you could say it feels like make or break this season, because he can't go through another season like he's had this year. You know, if he starts next season in the same way, you'd say, well, should he be going to the World Cup? And that would be the concern. Obviously, Mason Greenwood was someone they had huge hopes for, was going to be the centre forward. It comes down to, you know, Ronaldo. How do you drop Ronaldo? You know, there's still doubts about whether he's going to remain there next season, but you can't have a go at what he's done this year. He's, you know, the goals have been there. Last night, again, pretty much one chance, a goal. You know, he's been amazing.
Well, this is the problem with Ronaldo, as I've always said. He's not the problem, but he is a particular kind of problem. But then he's always been a particular kind of problem throughout his career, even when he was at his very best, because he doesn't really hold a position in the truest sense since 2008. Before 2007-8 for Man United, he was a winger and he got forward and scored goals and he played the wing, and it was classic, right? It was a classic goal-scoring wing forward. That's fine. Since 2007-8, Ferguson, because it worked, right, he cultivated him into this sort of free-roll attacker forward thing. And he doesn't really play on the wing, doesn't really play up front, and doesn't really work tactically without a forward, a number nine, who can sacrifice themselves for him. So it was Rooney at first, then it was Benzema who went to Real Madrid, and then at Juventus it was Morata. United only have one player like that, and he's 34 years old and has barely played this season. Edison Cavani. The player that can unlock United, Cristiano at Old Trafford, truly unlock him. He scored goals, but essentially he's a problem tactically because you can't counterattack with him because he's 34, 37, you can't run. You can't press with him because he can't press. So it's a problem they're going to have to deal with because he's obviously not a Ten Hag kind of striker, but he is a potent goal scorer. As Roy Keane was saying after the Chelsea game, you know, he's going to want to play every game and you can't drop him because he scores goals. But what you want to do is you can't replace that kind of goal scoring. So you just build the team around him. So you need a number nine. Now, for me, there's two options here. One is Tammy Abraham. I like Tammy Abraham a lot. He's done really well at Roma, got 15 goals this season. He's a good striker. He's a good goal scorer. He's a high volume chance goal scorer. So like he's had 11 scored 11 big chances this season. He's missed 18 big chances this season. So he you need to provide him chances. He's a classic number nine, big, fast, intelligent movement, good finishing technique. You know, he's good. And I don't know how much he cost from Roma, but I think he's quite good. He'd fit in quite well with United's young squad, very good. But for me, the star guy has to be Darwin Nunez. Benfica striker, Uruguayan, big, strong. He's like a young Cavani, but he's bigger. So he's a 6'4" young Cavani, like good looking, long hair, big, strong, broad shoulders, powerful runner. You know, not the best control and technique, sure, but like he's the kind of striker who, and I'm showing my age here, but he's the kind of striker who you can imagine playing in the 1990s in Serie A, like playing for Sampdoria. Or playing for Bologna, something like that, you know, and being an absolute cult icon on Football Italia. He's got that sort of energy to him, right? He's fantastic. He's scored more goals, and get this, he's scored more goals per 90 across the Europe's big six leagues, which is the big five leagues plus Portugal, than anyone. Robert Lewandowski has 1.11 goals per 90 minutes across the Europe's top five leagues this season, top six leagues. Darwin Nunez says 1.12. So he's just beat it because he's only played 1,700 minutes. So he scored 22 goals. And even that, 22 goals for 1,700 minutes, only Vlahovic, Benzema, Immobile, and Robert Lewandowski himself have more goals than his 22. Salah also has 22, Mbappe has 22. He's really prolific, and he just does the business. He can do it all. He's powerful. We saw against Liverpool, he gave their centre-backs a run for their money. Really did well in both of those games against Liverpool. And Liverpool are a very tough team to deal with. You know, and this is the other thing, what's really good about him is he's missed 14 big chances. He's scored 18. So he's scored more than he missed, right? So he's not that wasteful. I mean, look, he's not super clinical, right? So like Dusan Vlahovic, Wissam Ben Yedder, and Erling Haaland are super clinical. Like Vlahovic has scored 16 big chances, missed only six. Ben Yedder scored 18, missed only seven. And Erling Haaland has scored 15, missed only five. So those are guys, like when they get a big chance, they score it. Darwin might miss it and Mbappe, but then that's not necessarily a bad thing. Lewandowski has missed more big chances than he's scored, and Mbappe's missed twice as many. He's missed 22 big chances, scored 11. So great players get, what's important is getting into the positions. He gets into the positions, he takes the chances, he scores the goals. If you get Darwin Nunez up front, you have Darwin Nunez, Jadon Sancho, and then you could get rid of Marcus Rashford on the right, and you keep Cristiano Ronaldo around, you bring him on for other games. And the thing as well is, with Darwin being such a presence and such a force, you could maybe bring Ronaldo on as a right winger. He wouldn't play right wing, of course, but you could bring him on as a right winger for Marcus Rashford, or have him start there in some games and just give him that attacking free role to play off of Darwin Nunez, who isn't quite as elegant, as intelligent as Benzema, Rooney and so on. But he's such a big physical presence and such a magnet for defenders that he would just draw attention away from Ronaldo, who could then just ghost into positions like he enjoys to do and score goals. And we know his shooting technique is still fantastic. So even if Ronaldo stays, you can fix the Ronaldo problem, as it were, by signing an elite striker like Darwin Nunez to take pressure off him. But let's hope that Ten Hag at the Hag steering the ship, Ten Hag at the wheel, shall we say, they can get back to being...
Don't say that.
Ten Hag at the GPS. Ten Hag at the sat-nav, let's say that. You know, with Ten Hag leading the way, United can get back to being a sensibly run football club who makes sensible purchases. So, you know, sensible goalkeeping purchase to challenge De Gea, to push him to be better. A right back that can start, a defensive midfielder that can start, that can pass the ball forward to get it to midfielders in particular positions. Declan Rice, just sign Declan Rice, for God's sake, please. He's perfect. And then up front, a striker that can take pressure off Ronaldo, that can score goals themselves, and that can allow you to have pace and power in your attack, and then also still bring Ronaldo on to be his goal-scoring self, you know, with defenders otherwise occupied by a big number nine. Just make intelligent signings, and, you know, it can be back. It can be. It doesn't have to take forever. It can be done very quickly, but you have to make the right signs. You have to make the right moves in recruitment.
I would have my doubts about Abraham, I have to say. I think you just can't judge a striker in Italy these days. Yeah, I think Lukaku's been a classic example of that. Abraham's gone over there and he's banging him in. I think Italian football perhaps suits a different type of striker than works in the Premier League.
Okay, before we wrap up, 30 seconds each, and I mean 30 seconds, or there'll be smacked wrists and no more talk of anybody at any wheels. James, as you're the guest, out of politeness, we're going to let you go first. If Manchester United only make one signing this summer, who should it be?
I've got to say Declan Rice now, haven't I?
You can change. You can have a last-minute change of heart. Are you going for Declan Rice?
Because I don't think they'll be able to get Jude Bellingham, so Declan Rice.
Declan Rice. Okay, I've got a feeling that might have pinched your selection, Mo, but go on, give us one quickly. Who would you go for if you could only bring in one player to Old Trafford?
No, Ibrahim Sangare.
Okay.
They need a number six, Ibrahim Sangare. They can muddy through with McTominay at eight. They need a number six. They need Ibrahim Sangare or Aurelien Tchouaméni, one of those two, basically.
Okay, fair enough. Right, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. Eric, if you're listening, hopefully we've been of some help, but chances are probably not. Mo, James, thanks so much for your time today.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Great stuff indeed, guys. Thank you so much. As always, here with the Squawker Talker podcast, we are here every week with a big, big talking point from Premier League and or European football. So if you hit subscribe, you can get access to each week's brand new episode. So give it a click and away you go. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
The Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.